You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Big Suey, a podcast exclusive.
Risky move.
Just when you thought the show could not be more diluted.
Walk the plank.
Bam.
No more free Disney trips.
Now here's the marching band of nowhere.
Arr, matey.
Fat face.
Dan's been stress eating.
And the habitual liar.
Stugatz can't be trusted.
The Big Suey.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate radio life for me.
You know, Joakim Noah is not a Hall of Famer. There's no question about that. But here's why he has a chance to get to Springfield, Massachusetts, the birthplace of Dr. Seuss. It's because it's not an NBA Hall of Fame. It encompasses your entire career, so he's going to get points for what he did as a Florida Gator. And the Hall of, the Basketball Hall of Fame is notorious for admitting too many people. They induct like 15 or 20 people a year. It's ridiculous. And so he does have a chance. I still don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but he has a better chance than if he were him in basketball or in baseball or football. That's for sure.
Holy shit, he's better on the toilet. Did you guys see that? We found a magic place for him to spew takes. Hot takes with Greg Cody. But the thing that I was saying about Joakim Noah, Stugatz, is we have seen, we have all witnessed very quickly. Wait a minute. We're now in the bathroom. Chris, you're in your dad's house, and now you're taking us on a tour in the bathroom. What do you want us to know?
I caught him red-handed at the sink, not on the toilet. Not in that toilet.
Look at that.
I pulled up my pants.
I'm done my business.
He was just standing up in the bathroom instead. Thank you. Sit on the actual toilet.
Well, he was finished. He had flushed. No, he didn't give it a take.
No, I mean, he was faking it. I do find interesting the evolution that has resulted in, weirdly, we've all seen it, that the reason Joakim Noah can't play anymore, and Cortez was just telling Chris, Joakim Noah and LeBron James are the same age. That seems impossible, impossible to believe. That in real time with us watching it, we saw the evolution of that sport from dinosaurs to pterodactyls in a way. Oh, wait, in order to be Joakim Noah now, you got to be able to shoot threes. Like, you can't even play. You can't play unless you're all the things Joakim Noah was. And also, you've got, like, it went past Whiteside and Capella that way. It's like, no, you can't play down there anymore. Stugatz, did you see? It was unbelievable here recently. There were two results in basketball that I couldn't believe recently. One, Denver's playing against Washington. Denver is down two. Denver is coming down two on a fast break. They've got like a 4-on-1. They've got an easy layup to tie. But all three guys for Denver on the fast break spread out to the three-point line. They miss the three. They lose the game. But, like, they had no interest in tying that game. They were right. Doing it from reflex so much.
Sure.
That, and I remember the first time I saw that. It was the Warriors of Clay and Steph. It's the first time I saw it. I'm like, wait, they're not going for twos anymore. They're just on fast breaks. They're spreading out to the corners. They like that shot better.
Draymond would take the ball down, and Steph and Clay would go out to the wings for a three-point shot on a 3-on-1 fast break.
But this is the number I'm going to give you here. I don't even understand. This feels like a riddle. Did you guys see how the Kings lost the other night? Listen to what I'm about to say to you. I don't even know how you do this. This is how quickly the game, how quickly you could get 9 points in this game now.
This was special from Luke Walton.
The Kings are up. You tell me how a professional basketball team in the NBA loses a basketball game in which all of the following is true. The Kings are up 123-115, 8 points. With a pair of free throws and possession and 1:09 left in the game.
Up 8, 2 shots, and the ball?
2 shots and the ball.
Wow. Okay.
And they lose the game.
Remember when
Luke Walton... think I've got that right. I think it's two shots and the ball. I don't think it's just two shots and possession. I don't think it's just the two shots. I think it's two shots and the ball.
Remember when Luke Walton, according to winning percentage, was the greatest head coach we'd ever seen?
How great was that? What did he start, like 34-2 with those Warriors that started playing the game this way?
I think officially all those wins went to Steve Kerr, even though Steve Kerr was out, colon back. But then he went to Los Angeles, missed that train by a little bit, and now is in Sacramento blowing these kind of leads. It's funny. Even Steve Kerr is not showing that he's as good of a coach without the same sort of weapons. And I'm not even talking about Kevin Durant, just Clay. Being able to have both Steph and Clay is the cheat code.
Greg Cody, Homer Greg Cody, your thoughts on Joakim Noah from now actually the toilet. Your thoughts as the Homer Heat journalist. How do you feel about the 10 years? Did you hate Joakim Noah? Did you want to put a middle finger in his face like that woman murderer fan from Boca?
Yeah, it was the little hair bun that got to me. There must be a phrase for it. I don't know what it's called in the coif world, but that little hair bun he wore always sort of annoyed me. But I think it bears saying that when we're astonished that Joakim Noah and LeBron are the same age, LeBron is the freak there in that, you know, players are supposed to peter out when they're 36, NBA players. Noah is normal. He's what you expect of a player that age whose game hasn't adapted. And by the way, Chris Bosh's game would have aged so well in the NBA. But LeBron is the freak. I mean, you know, we always lose sight of the fact that what he's doing at his age, as good as ever at 36, is the amazing thing about LeBron James. So Noah represents the average typical player. He's 36 years old. He's beginning to look it. And now all of a sudden, in the middle of a season, he retires.
I am curious to see how his Hall of Fame candidacy goes, because you're now having younger voters and they may hold against him what happened to the end of his career being phased out. A guy that was a total liability with the basketball in his hands going up for a shot. It was like a shot put. Remember how ugly that form was.
But Mike, Vlade Divac is in the Basketball Hall of Fame.
I think you look at his entire basketball career, when you consider what he did at Florida, which was amazing, and really actually started bucking against the trend. It was really an upset for him to come back to school.
Mike,
and
I'm
run
sorry.
It back.
I need to interrupt you, Mike, because we've got a bit of an emergency and a calamity in our midst. And it's
disgusting.
Okay, we'll get to you in a second. This is what I want to get to. It is disgusting. Chris has arrived in a disgusting situation. But Ryan Cortez simply wanted to point it out that Joakim Noah averaged 9-9 on 49% shooting. So he doesn't think that a Hall of Fame discussion is merited here on Joakim Noah.
We all agree with that. We're saying when you combine the years at Florida and the years overseas, the Basketball Hall of Fame is a complete joke. He's going to get
in. Okay, but I think he might be right. I think Ryan might be right on, I don't care what your other credentials are, even if they include basketball saving the world from famine. If it's 9-9 in your professional career, generally that doesn't get you into the Hall of Fame. You need to have a professional career that's a little better than 9-9.
Well, do you think Ben Wallace is a Hall of Famer?
Well, I don't think he's gotten in because of this, and he doesn't have the college resume. But I also think of Ben Wallace as the top guy at defense, period, across a decade. Not 1 year as defensive player of the year.
Mutombo's in. He couldn't have averaged much more than 9 points per game, right?
What separates Ben Wallace is he won an NBA title. I think Ben Wallace should get in just because of what he did defensively. When you combine what Joakim Noah did defensively and what he did in college, which cannot be overlooked, I think he gets in. But those Bulls and the Grindhouse Grizzlies, they were the death rattle of that style of basketball. Grindhouse Grizzlies got eliminated when Andrew Bogut realized, okay, Tony Allen, you just go out there. We're going to put Bogut on Tony Allen, and he's just going to let Tony Allen be on the perimeter. Oh, you can't shoot? Ah, this doesn't work anymore.
But listen to what we were talking about earlier, where the evolution of Jim Rome is over 30 years in the media on how you get old, and the evolution in bigger, stronger, faster is right there. The evolution of it happens that fast, where the money realizes, wait a minute, the efficiencies are over here, and Joakim Noah becomes almost literally a dinosaur right before your eyes.
Mutombo was 10-10. Cortez, does that get him in? Like, if Noah was 10-10, we have a different discussion?
But no, because Mutombo and Ben Wallace are much better defensive players across a decade than Joakim Noah. Joakim Noah got that.
Defensive player of the year.
Noah got it over a couple of years. When I associate Ben Wallace with, that's the reason they won a championship, because that was at the center of their defense. Couldn't score a lick I associate him only with defense across a decade. We're not, come on, guys. Joakim Noah is not the defensive player in reputation across a decade that the kind of guys you're talking about were.
I think Ben Wallace is a better, for his era, because I think Ben Wallace would have struggled mightily if he just extended his career a little bit and played in the same timeline as Joakim Noah. I think we'd point to Joakim Noah and say, well, he's slightly more athletic. He's slightly more versatile of a defender. But I think he's not Ben Wallace in terms of how he's regarded with his era, but he's pretty close. He's pretty close.
I have made the mistake of not going to Chris Cody earlier here because he has been showing us something in the Zoom that Greg Cody, I believe, to be disgusting. So, Greg Cody, you are in your bathroom, still on your toilet. And, Chris, do you want to make this an accusation? How do you want to share with the audience what you were trying to just show us as, for some reason, you're doing the show from your father's house today?
Yes. Okay. So I have only one of my dad's earpiece. He has one of these. I hate these kind of earpieces. The ones you have to like jam into your ear. Like get regular headphones. And I only have one in because one of them. I don't know if you guys want to see this. It's making me like throw up looking at it. It's an orange piece of crust. That what? Here, I'll show you guys. Ready? Here it is.
Greg. Greg.
Oh wow.
See that?
Oh, wow.
Wow. Oh, excuse me. And, earwax. Excuse me.
That was disgusting.
It's really bad.
No. This won't be done to Greg. I don't believe that to not be Chris's. In fact, I believe Greg is in the top three in cleanly ears in this group. Greg Thank looks you. Like he has clean ears to me.
Yeah, thanks, Billy. I do You're have welcome. Clean ears. They're full of wax, but that doesn't make them dirty. You know, I have candles in my ears, but still I consider them to be clean ears. You know,
Clears.
What can I tell you? Yeah. Clears.
He has to do his back in my day from the toilet.
All right, let's do it
I'm
next.
Making the call.
Yeah.
And now it is time to take a trip down memory lane.
Here's Greg.
Hold on a second. He's on the toilet. He's on the toilet.
He has to get it. He's like Jim Rome.
He's got to get it. Yeah, he's got to get it.
Does all the prep.
All right. He's back on the toilet now.
All right. So
Rome has his throne, so does Greg.
You want us to start over?
Yeah, we got to start over. Let's start over. Hold on. This is Jim Rome from the throne. Let's do Greg Cody's Back in My Day. How do you age with grace? This is how you age with grace.
And now it is time to take a trip down memory lane. Here's your guy, Greg Cody, with Back in My Day.
NBA Top Shot.
Uh-oh.
One of my hobbies is searching out signs of the apocalypse, and one of those is how we humans keep volunteering ourselves as eager lemmings following technological trends. One of the latest dumbfounding examples of that is called NBA Top Shot, a.k.a. digital basketball cards. Let's start with the obvious. If it isn't a thin piece of cardboard, 2.5 by 3.5 inches, it ain't a basketball card. What this is the NBA inventing a new revenue stream for itself and casting its line into the stream teeming with the most gullible of fish, millennials. These are defined as bored young adults with too much time on their hands, too much disposable income, a preference for virtual reality over actual reality, and an addiction that sees them snorting tech trends as status symbols. We got you covered, says the NBA. So out of thin air, they invent a marketplace, and it quickly fills with consumers who buy the dubious sales pitch that reads, unforgettable NBA highlights become collectibles you own forever. Wow. Yeah, sure, because why watch that memorable Tyler Hero buzzer-beating three from his rookie year as many times as you want on YouTube for free, when you can pay $379 for it and delude yourself into seeing value and being one of hundreds of other people who also own the same short clip that everybody else can see anytime for free. If I'm paying $379 for a few seconds of film, it had better be Da Vinci in the midst of the Mona Lisa, Brahms composing the lullaby, or Julia Child making her first omelet. I'd pay $379 to not see yet again a LeBron dunk that ESPN has already force-fed me ad nauseum. NBA Top Shot is indicative of a growing plague that finds us more and more addicted to digital. Why hold an actual book when Kindle saves you the burden of turning an actual page? Why pay for a newspaper when news is a click away? or carry cash when a piece of plastic will do the trick. Cookbooks, encyclopedias, photo albums, entire shopping centers, all murdered by the convenience of digital. Just before learning about NBA Top Shot, I was reading about digital artwork or crypto art involving blockchain and NFTs or non-fungible tokens. What the? I'm fluent in English, but I need a full-time tech translator by my side. There's also digital memorabilia now. Yeah, because why keep that space-eating ceramic screen that's been in your family for six generations when you can store a photo of it in your smartphone? I tell you what, I'll keep the ceramic figurine, I'll buy a painting that involves canvas, not a computer, and I'll pay $379 to never again hear the phrase digital basketball card. I'm Greg Cody, and that's how it was back in my day.
That was How You Age with Grace, ladies and gentlemen, by reluctantly and stubbornly yelling at millennials as they change the currency and popularity and you grow old on your toilet. Mike Ryan, do you have any objection to what Greg Cody just did there? Because Billy has been saying the same stuff less eloquently, and I think people probably side with Billy and Greg and not you, habit of the day guy who decides to get into the Wall Street game from whatever it is that's popular that week.
I understand, because I've needed some convincing as to why non-fungible tokens have value. And it is different than being able to watch a clip that other people's have. Each non-fungible token is individually numbered. The lower the serial number, the higher the value. And they do make these rarer commodities. It's a commodity. And it's actually, I understand that it's not tangible in the sense that you can't hold it, but you can watch it and it's yours. So it has a value because people are out there willing to pay for it. And right now it's a beta version. So if you're looking to get rich quick, hold until China gets in the game.
Always looking to get rich quick. I'm in.
Greg, where are you? You're staring at your phone. You're on the toilet. How are you feeling about all of this as an experiment? How are you? Where are you more comfortable? Because you've been vastly better on the toilet than you've been everywhere else we've been talking to you.
Right. No, I feel fine in the toilet, on the toilet. I love the toilet. I'm a very regular man. And it's sort of a combination of sitting in my office chair and standing and roaming. You know, it's like a happy medium for me.
Hey, it's Mike, and I know you were hoping for an update on those fishtail ponds in my backyard. Well, have I got news for you. I actually got lighting installed, and I can change it with an app. Beautiful fishtail ponds lit up red, depending on my mood. If my hockey team wins, we light those suckers red. Anyways, I like being outside. I like looking at those fishtail palms. You love hearing about it. But what's in my hand other than my app changing the lighting? A Miller Lite is in my hand. That's right, because I know when a Miller Lite is in my hand, I make a good time, Miller time. I take that first sip, I know immediately I made the right call. Nothing goes with my fishtail palms quite like a Miller Lite. It makes everything so much better. And I'm going to have some people over. I'm going to toss them that beautiful white can. They're going to say, heck yeah. And they're going to have that first sip and know, just like me, that they made the right call. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.
Stay there. We will talk to you about now serious subject matter. We are segueing into serious pop culture matter. Yes, Chris, before I go on the flume towards seriousness.
I'm just noticing that his elbows, though, are rested on his knees, and that's a dangerous game for too long sitting on the toilet.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, do you need some advice here? Yes, okay, you need to sit up, Greg, and
your butt's going to fall asleep. Mm-hmm. Your whole bottom half's going to fall asleep.
That circulation is going to be bad for you.
I'm not sitting at attention on my toilet.
So you may have noticed, okay, we have talked before about the content game and how interesting it is that there is a flood right now. Flood beyond influencers and people who see that they can make money on TikTok. There is simply a flood toward the value of content, even in a pandemic. Can you successfully get stuff up and running? Can you feed the machine in a way that gets people interested during a pandemic who are eating up a lot of content? And viewing habits all over the world are changing on television in these super subtle ways where you heard yesterday our show just sort of discover, I feel like I'm more interested now in a five-part documentary that's 5 hours than I am in a movie that's 2 hours. And the people who are creators are saying, well, I don't want to keep stuff to 2 hours. We saw this a long time ago with HBO and Woody Harrelson and McConaughey getting into True Detective, where they're like, wait a minute, I can put the same work that I would into a movie and it can be 2 hours, or I can put it into a movie and it'll be on television, it'll be 9 hours, and Scorsese will look down at me, but I'll be in the content game in a way that makes me make something exactly how I want, as long as I want it, for HBO, because I'm making movies for HBO because they got a streaming service.
That's a line of demarcation, right?
I feel like that's where I remember it, that show being like, wait a minute, these guys don't, they're no longer looking at going at television as the demotion. David Caruso wanted to leave the popular things on television because he had to be a movie star. It was important to be a movie star.
But that's the first time you remember a show like that, like big stars, 10 episodes, that's it, call it a season?
In the United States, that was really the game changer for television, having A-listers. In the BBC, you would still have Benedict Cumberbatch and some of the big actors over there across the pond do miniseries events, but True Detective signaled like, oh my God, how did they get McConaughey? How did they get Woody? And after True Detective, the game changed, and now everyone is doing things outside of maybe like the top half of a 1%.
There might be something else, but that's where I remember it. Like, why are these guys here doing this thing? This is a step down for them. They're supposed to be above HBO. But the reason I bring it up, there are a handful of places. I think you've heard me talk about what I believe to be the genius of Floyd Mayweather, and many people roll their eyes. What are you talking about? He's the original streaming service in sports. Like, he got there.
Pretty much,
I mean, he got there a lot earlier than everybody else and figured out how to not never get hit. How to take all our money and never get hit, because he just created an environment long before Conor McGregor, better than Conor McGregor, because he didn't actually descend into the stuff of, I get hit. Like, I'm never going to get exposed. I'm going to be the one who beats Canelo Alvarez because I'm going to fight him when he's not ready. And I'm gonna plan this so meticulously, I'm going to be the original streaming service.
Was it Tyson before him or no? I mean,
no, not owning it. Tyson was getting $1 million in a suitcase with Don King and then kicking Don King on a street in Miami out of a car because he's coked up, because Don King's stealing all his money. Right? Floyd owned his shit and made it an original streaming service. And so the reason I bring all this up, though, is because of the top 10% or 5% of television is far better than it's ever been. And there's 80% shit, and the bottom is worse than it's ever been. But the top 10% is crazy good. And Allen versus Pharaoh on HBO now, something that we have been wanting to tackle somehow uncomfortably forever. Everyone's heard these accusations. Woody Allen has gotten very good at defending them defiantly in press conferences. And we wander away because we don't want anywhere near this subject matter. We don't understand. We'll eat it up, like in terms of tearing down a celebrity, Stugatz. But this subject matter is uncomfortable. We've slogged through it with the Penn State scandal. We don't know how to talk about some of these things. And we don't understand how Sandusky is able to groom a separation of children from the people who love them in order to prey on them in a way that is sinister, evil, illegal, and we still don't know how to deal with, because our solution to whatever this illness is to throw these people in jail where they get ravaged by the prison system, and it's the worst experience possible for whatever that mental illness is. We don't know how to do anything with it, and now it's televised. Now it's on HBO. We did it with Michael Jackson. These things have to be carefully vetted already, because Woody Allen, I can't even imagine what watching this is like for Woody Allen and his wife, who's actually his adopted daughter. Like, I can't even imagine what it is to watch this as you see a whole bunch of people show you inside, this is how it happened. This is how an adult grooms a child to separate that child from everybody, to prey on that child sexually. And Woody Allen's people, because there's a huge economy around Woody Allen, are suing, because in his own words, you hear the audiobook, in his own words, they did not get permission on that. I've asked Billy to get me the directors of this, because it is a fascinating look into something with a great degree of difficulty, a story that no one's been able to tell the way it's being told right now in four parts on HBO. But it will leave you totally creeped out. It will end Woody Allen's career. And it will make you ashamed of yourself for not noticing that Woody Allen has been telling you he's been doing this in his movies with every 45-year-old guy he purposely puts with a 17-year-old. Could be 18, could be 19, could be 20. But in front of your eyes, a theme in all of those movies, like all of the movies that made him popular, was a relationship that wasn't 40-year-old with 6-year-old, but was as close as he could come to telegraph to the audience, hey, I'm doing something here that you need to be more okay with. You need to get a little more comfortable. And we celebrated those movies.
He was that brazen with it? It was there, that obvious?
It's movie after movie where you see sort of a relationship with an age difference that's preying on a young girl that's as close as you can come to doing that in a film without, you do it with a Lolita situation in 12, people are going to run you off. You keep doing it at 17, 16, 18 with dangerous relationships again and again, and it becomes impossible not to notice that America missed it. That America missed, as he's marrying his daughter, as he's preying on a family that looks at him and sees a serial abuser and nobody believes them because he's got the machine to get into a press conference and deny it. And we don't want to get in the murky there and we can't get close to it. And he's now going to fight to save his career. And this movie's going to bury him. I think it finishes him.
They have Woody Allen's audio book speaking for Woody Allen. And you always have to be weary whenever you see one of these documentaries that is very clearly taking the side of a family because they got unbelievable access. But rather than criticize the access, I'm just, with my jaw dropped, understanding how Mia Farrow could handle this and process this in her mind as she walks into rooms and these things are happening, and you judge people by the times, but how do you love this man, how do you reconcile these two things? And she's speaking for herself, she's doing an okay job of trying to speak to how someone could just keep this going, but I'm still there in bewilderment.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because everyone at Penn State, and I don't think that we feel like that's the scandal of our lifetime in sports. And I don't feel, with all the reporting, there's been award-winning reporting done around this. I don't feel like we get this icky a look at how it happens. This isn't To Catch a Predator, you know, coming in and Chris Hansen coming into a room and making reality television. This is the nuanced thing of how does someone you love do this right in front of your eyes and wreck the people in your family because he's taking advantage right in front of your eyes, but you love him. And so it can't be. It can't be that what he was just doing to your daughter and putting suntan lotion, a young daughter putting suntan lotion on her lower back or near her butt crack is making everyone uncomfortable. And yet he's Woody Allen. He's Woody Allen.
And pre-Me Too, this stuff was out there. I remember being in my teenage years wondering, how are people still working with Woody Allen? How does he still have this influence when everyone just assumes he is this pedophile? He married his own daughter.
I might be an idiot, but this might be like the Bill Cosby thing where you end up seeing this get tried because other people have done the investigating that appalls America so much that it gets an attention of a prosecutor somewhere who decides that he's got to investigate some stuff if the statute of limitations hasn't run out on
it. He finally got canceled because people canceled his book deals for the most part. I know he still has his audio book out there, but he's not getting the projects or the people still. I know Scarlett Johansson was still working with him to an uncomfortable point in his career. He's not getting those projects anymore, but it'll be interesting to see if what punitive measures there might be retroactively here and if the family even wants to pursue that.
You say it can't be because wife is too close to him, people are too close to him. It should have been that way, though. You can. No, it can be like that. You can see something wrong going on in your own household and put a stop to it or try to put a stop to it.
Okay, well, watch it first, please. Like, okay. Yes, of course, Stugatz.
I think we're all with you there.
I'd like to think, I'm trying to put myself in a similar situation and trying to figure out what I would do.
But we would all do the right thing. Watch it, please. Look at Mia Farrow's perspective and just watch it. Just listen to her talk about it. Of course, Stugatz. You will get 100% agreement from everyone who's not a pedophile on absolutely. Everyone protect everyone from everything. It's the worst crime you could do to a woman. But don't play the result here, like without having even seen the movie. Yes, that's the easiest stance, and it's the most correct stance. Yes, please stop it. But it still happens because people fail to stop it. And this is showing you through two parts how.
I'm not playing the result. I was actually wondering aloud there, would I do something to someone that I loved so much?
You hope so. We all hope so. Yeah. Everyone agrees with that. Stugatz, you're on the right side here. I'm just saying that the movie is trying to show you how does this happen, and that's where you'll get appalled. Right there, because it's sophisticated manipulation. Like, it is predatory, and it is manipulation that is so sophisticated that it allows you to weave through the labyrinth of even a woman who was married to Frank Bleepin' Sinatra.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to weave in and out because, well, what's normal here? He's a weirdo. He's an artist. He's a creative. He doesn't live with me. He doesn't want children. what's normal here? I love him. And it sort of explains it to you. And you can stand on the outside. I would never let that happen to me. That would never happen to my kids. I would put a stop to it. But you've got family members left and right telling you how it happened in their home in front of all of them, including Stugatz, shaping Ronan Farrow, son of Frank Sinatra, into the Me Too journalist who's doing the Pulitzer Prize winning work that is getting women their rights back because he understand he lived inside of this nest that had love and evil in it.
Has that been definitively answered?
I mean, look at him. Look at his face. It's been definitively answered by his face.
I know. His mom, Mia, cracked the door open. Look at his face. He's got the old blue eyes on it. But I was watching it with my wife, and she kind of knew about Woody Allen, but didn't know the intricacies of all this, and she didn't really know what Ronan Farrow was doing. And I said, that's Woody Allen's son. And she goes, no, that's not. I'm like, you're right. It's Frank Sinatra's.
Cody, your thoughts from the toilet.
I've watched the first episode of that. I haven't seen the second yet, and I was riveted. And, you know, Mia Farrow is well-known and well-respected, and there's a real credibility to this documentary, I think. And I was about one, watching it with my wife, I was about one-third of the way through it, and I looked at her and I said, he can't survive this. And he won't, because his manipulation was subtle, and that's why it wasn't so obvious that family members jumped in and called the cops. What he did was very gradual, based on the first episode, what he did was very gradual. And so it's a fascinating thing to watch play out. I can't wait to see the second series. Part of me feels bad for Woody Allen, to be honest with you, and I don't know why.
Oh, wait, hold on a second. Okay. Hold on. Let me just stop you there.
He's on the toilet.
Well, you should have stopped him five seconds ago.
Well, I should have stopped him. Actually, I can't wait to watch it when it came out Sunday, and it's Tuesday, and he hasn't watched it. So clearly he can wait to watch it.
Should we allow him to explain his position or just walk it back immediately?
Yes, you should be allowed to explain your position. But if it goes much beyond sort of how must he be watching this, I'm not sure where the defenses are. Like, yes, he must be in horror watching something he has defended or lied about for 20 years played out this publicly in a way that allows us a glimpse into his life. He must be horrified because he's been caught.
Let the man finish, and then we'll judge Greg. Go ahead.
No, I'm totally pro-victim here, and don't mistake that. When I say that part of me feels bad for Woody Allen, it's simply that I've been a admirer of his work for my entire life, from Annie Hall forward. I've seen most of his movies. I respect him as a filmmaker very much. And to think that this talented man had such an evil side in his personal life, it makes me sad for him, for
that is the most blessed definition of your narcissism that I've ever heard. You don't feel bad for him. You feel bad for you because your thoughts of him have changed. Like, oh my God, Greg, you don't actually know yourself well enough to know you don't feel bad for him. You feel bad for you that this thing you thought of a creative artist is a bit of a lie because you can't separate the message from the messenger.
But that's a bummer. That's a very human way. I'm coming around to Greg's side. He certainly should not have framed it that way. But a part of him also gets canceled. A part of him and what shaped him as a man, which is Woody Allen's art, dies too. And that's a huge bummer. This has happened across music a ton of times. Some of my favorite acts, I don't even feel the need to listen to anymore just because of what the horrible things that they've done.
But the big mistake Greg, was you feel bad for yourself. You don't feel bad for Woody Allen.
No, Mike just spoke for my feelings much more accurately than Dan did, by the way. And I'd appreciate having my words speak for myself rather than have somebody else tell me what I'm feeling and what I mean. I'm going to stand by exactly what I said. I'm in favor of the victim here. I think what Woody Allen has done is just despicable. It doesn't mean that I don't feel bad that a man of that artistic stature has allowed his life to go off the rails like this. And that's the way I feel. And I don't need Dan telling me how I feel.
He's allowed his artistic life to go off the rails like this because he's a predator who preys on actual victims. And while I am someone who extends compassion at every turn, I do believe it's incumbent upon the viewers of the artist to separate the artist and the art. It's only something you and I, Greg, have been arguing about in 30 years in sports, because you keep people out of the Hall of Fame. because you don't like to separate the artist from the art. You conflate and confuse the two all the time in a way that represents our greatest differences in how we cover sports and the human beings who play sports. And it's an argument we've had over 30 years.
I'm totally good with Dan representing me on these topics.
Well, I just can't believe that Greg, the professional communicator, basically ceded the floor and said, yeah, what Mike said on what I think. Yeah.
I mean, he's on the toilet.
No, I mean, Mike spoke what I think more accurately than you did is what I'm saying. And in this last thing you said, which misrepresents me, what do you mean about the Hall of Fame thing and everything? I vote for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. I'm not sure exactly what you mean there.
Oh, this again.
Hey, oh, for no. The love of God.
I guess I
he brought it up.
I think I was able to communicate it well just because it's sad to say, but we've had so much experience having to say goodbye to parts of our lives in that artistic realm. Not even in sports. I threw away a Kellen Winslow autographed football. He was one of my favorite players ever. And there's just parts of you that you have to say goodbye to. And I was always, I always seek answers as to what is the tipping point here on separating the art from the artist. And I read an article that was about Ryan Adams, and someone went to this like tastemaker influencer in music saying, how should I approach this Ryan Adams thing? And he's like, everybody to each their own. For me, I just haven't had the need since I've learned about Ryan Adams to listen to Ryan Adams. It has shaped me. The horrible things that they have done, I don't feel the need inside me to listen to Ryan Adams anymore. One of my favorite electronic acts ever, Crystal Castles. Horrible abuse, physical, emotional, sexual abuse. The producer that was brilliant and the front person, she says don't listen to my music anymore. I honor that. I don't listen to it, which is a damn shame because absolute bangers.
Is Michael Jackson the only one whose talent is sort of the Chick-fil-A of delicious music where people won't sit it out in boycott no matter what the offense or how accurate the truths are? Is Michael Jackson the talent level that pushes the boundary of that exercise of
trying? The music's so good, you'll forget about what's going on.
It's the Chick-fil-A. I think the MyPillow guy thinks
Chick-fil-A.
I think the MyPillow guy thinks his pillows are that.
Also, he's dead. He's dead. So I think he'd get canceled all over again if he were still here. He'd have to answer for some of it.
It's interesting that you guys bring this up because I don't know if you've seen what one of the moves in content is, but it's an important one as some of this stuff gets covered and gets thrown out in the open better than it ever has because it's complicated subject matter and it's difficult to make your way through it. But George Clooney is getting into a documentary in which he tells the story of a coach at Ohio State, I think responsible for a whole lot of abuse, and George Clooney wants, and I believe if I have this right, it's male coaches on male victims. And then on top of that, and I was reading this the other day, Stugatz, because this is uncomfortable too, it's Nassar adjacent. You know the name Nassar because we've sort of seen the doctor who was manipulating gymnasts in a way that's uncomfortable and was caught. But there was someone adjacent to Nassar who had 24 felonies, Stugatz, that were attached to him. And then he killed himself. And the victims feel no sense of justice because the last act of cowardice.
They're outraged. I believe it was the Olympic coach. Yeah.
That he, his exit ramp on all of that was not to face trial, not to have to absorb judgment and justice, that he wins at the end for victims who wanted some semblance of being able to see him punished for his crimes and how he ruined their childhoods or scarred them in ways that echo into adulthood, that are part, because it's almost the worst thing you could do to a child short of killing them.
Yeah, they feel like he got off easy by being allowed, you know, being able to kill himself and not have to go sit in prison. Yes, they feel like he got off easy.
Light subject matter. Speaking of sitting, Cody is still on the toilet with his elbows on his knees. Do you want to punctuate the segment for us here, Greg? You feel like you've been represented by me. You're seething at me. Because I didn't, I could see from a distance your face in the toilet room there. And is that, are you okay?
Toilet room.
Yeah. Well, you're just because it feels like you have a toilet room inside your bathroom. It feels like you have a bathroom inside your bathroom.
I do, yes. I it's like multi-layered here. It's a room full of mirrors. It's the toilet room. That's what I call it all the time. No, I'm ready to move on from you grossly misrepresenting me. I love you anyway. You know that. Precious. Yes-ish.
Hey, it's Mike, and I know you were hoping for an update on those fishtail ponds in my backyard. Well, have I got news for you. I actually got lighting installed, and I can change it with an app. Beautiful fishtail ponds lit up red, depending on my mood. If my hockey team wins, we light those suckers red. Anyways, I like being outside. I like looking at those fishtail ponds. You love hearing about it. But what's in my hand other than my app changing the lighting? A Miller Lite is in my hand. That's right, because I know when a Miller Lite is in my hand, I make a good time, Miller time. I take that first sip, I know immediately I made the right call. Nothing goes with my fishtail ponds quite like a Miller Lite. It makes everything so much better. And I'm going to have some people over. I'm going to toss them that beautiful white can. They're going to say, heck yeah. And they're going to have that first sip and know, just like me, that they made the right call. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.